You found the Digging Oak Island podcast, a podcaster's journey to discover the truth behind the Oak Island mystery. I'm Dave McBride. Thank you guys so much for downloading and listening. If you've been listening to and enjoying our little podcast, please consider helping us out by becoming a patron. Go to patreon.com/diggingoakisland to learn more. All right, everybody. Thanks for joining me. Let's get a plug in for the Patreon page again right off the top here. If you think this podcast is worth $5 a month, that's it. $5 a month to you. And you'd like to see us keep going. You want to be listening all throughout the rest of this show and maybe even past this show's lifetime. Then please consider becoming a patron of the show. Go to patreon.com/diggingoakisland and sign up. If you become a patron, you get exclusive access to a live chat during the U.S. broadcast of each new episode of The Curse of Oak Island. I love that chat. It is so much fun. Always look forward to that each and every Tuesday night when the show's on. So join up. Come and join us. And again, go to patreon.com/diggingoakisland. You can sign up, support the podcast. It's only $5 a month. You can cancel anytime. If you're somebody who doesn't want to do the monthly thing but wants to contribute to the podcast, you could do so via Venmo with a donation to @DaveMcBrideMusic. I don't have a Venmo account set up just for the show, but that is my Venmo account for my business as a musician and kind of my virtual tip jar for people who don't have money and want to tip you. Anyway, Venmo @DaveMcBrideMusic. All right. As always, let's start today's podcast with emails and messages from you guys, the listeners. Got some good ones today. Let's start off with an email from Kathy, who writes, I have seen every episode of Digging Oak Island. I've read several books on Oak Island, including The Mystery Solved. I tried to get through Zena Halpern's book, but found it confusing. I have noticed that during the last two seasons that my concentration during the show wanders. When I see Charles Barkhouse and Craig Tester opening yet another mud sausage, that's a great expression, Kat, and getting excited over finding wood, I'm not surprised. I also start to obsess over why Rick's beard is gray, but the hair on his head is dark. Also notice that Marty's hair has gotten darker over the years. That being said, I'm still watching and wanting something significant to be found. I'm so glad that Laird is there to be the voice of reason when everyone gets excited about some of the finds without proof. I really want something to be found at the bottom of the garden shaft and not just another searcher tunnel. I was interested in the water tests that found gold and silver. I'm in for the long run and will watch until the last episode is shown. I hope that the last episode will be a celebration and that Dan Blankenship will be up in heaven jumping for joy. Kathy. Kathy, beautifully put there at the end. You know, obviously, me, myself, and many of the patrons, many of the people listening are also in for the long haul. However, I got to tell you, I tend not to notice things like hair color until they're pointed out to me. So now I'm going to notice every time I watch. Listen, many people get self-conscious when they're on TV, right? So let's cut the boys a little bit of slack here on that end. And yes, we would all like to hear much more on the show from Laird Niven. He's the one guy on the island, the one guy part of the quote-unquote fellowship who's genuinely not there for a treasure and really not even there for television, which might be why we don't get to hear all that much from him, right? Come to think of it. Anyway, Kathy, thank you for writing in. Here's hoping that the series ends in exactly the way you described for us there. That would be something else. And that would be what we're all hoping for, really. All right, it's time to head across the Atlantic and hear from our old friend Gary in England, who writes, Hi, Dave. As season 11 comes to a close, I thought I would mention my main objection to the idea of a money pit on the island, which seems to have been given some credence this season. The Dumas excavation in the garden shaft is the first time we have seen any recent deep mining type activity on Oak Island. As those annoying graphics repeatedly remind us, there is massive amounts of shoring required to dig a shaft this deep, and even then, they are having problems with the water. In the original Money Pit story, whichever version you may have read, there is no mention whatsoever of shoring. There is a mention of pick marks in the clay and log platforms, but no shoring. Are we really to believe that someone, be the Templars, the British, the Spanish, the Portuguese, dropped a shaft 100 feet down without shoring? I don't think I've seen this point made at any time during the show, but I think the Dumas work illustrates how unlikely the original story seems. Regards, Gary in England. Okay, for those folks who aren't following that, shoring is the process of, essentially holding this all up, right? It's the process of constructing like beams and walls and so forth and a shaft so the whole thing just doesn't collapse in on you, which could easily happen. Gary, the original story of the discovery of the money pit, which, let's face it, is simply legend now, more than documented proof. I mean, as you mentioned, it does speak of planks every 10 feet or so. And when the Onslow Company came in 10 years later, they were the ones who discovered more of these like wood platforms, the putty-like clay around the coconut fiber. Could this have been evidence of a hastily put together and somewhat primitive form of shoring? It's hard to tell because in their haste to get to the treasure, the early searchers really kind of destroyed all of this if it were there and didn't exactly take copious notes for posterity's sake, right? Also, whatever shoring was in the money pit, if it was there, has since collapsed and been lost to history. So it's hard really to confirm anything at this point. So I kind of lean towards you know, what you're saying here. But you make an excellent point, right? That kind of thing, some reasonable shoring, it absolutely would need to be in place to truly dig out an elaborate tunnel, a vault, and a a shaft, a tunnel, a vault, a booby trap system, especially down at the depths we're talking about here. For sure, there are plenty of gaps in the original story, and maybe this is just another gap. That's the best I can say for you. Who knows? Great stuff, Gary. Always great to hear from you. Let's hear now from Patrick, who has provided us with some amazing insight the last few weeks. Patrick writes, "Hi, Dave. I submitted my email too late for the podcast last week, but this has given me a chance to update my thoughts. And if any of this is addressed in the latest episode coming up, please ignore, especially if I'm wrong. Last week, I'm sure I'm not the only one who Googled old button, three cannons, and three dots. It appears the second button they found on Lot 5 is a British Royal Artillery button from sometime between 1748 and 1802, which would have been right after the Revolutionary War. After the war ended, we know that over 30,000 British loyalists moved to Nova Scotia, so it's exciting to be able to confirm that the British were present on Lot 5 after the war. It's also possible that the building on Lot 5 could date back further, and whoever the button belonged to reused the structure at a later date. A picture comparing the Lot 5 discovery to an example of a British artillery button with three cannons is attached, and I'll put that on the Facebook page for you guys to see. There are also over 20 similar variations of this button I found online that all fall within the same time period. Going back to the episode 3 weeks ago, they discovered a potential mortar along the stone foundation on Lot 5, and Jamie said there appeared to be a lot of ash and crushed up shale in the soil. If it were mortar, then it was probably crushed up limestone, which we know is available on the island. That was then burned to create lime. Lime and sand are the two main ingredients for mortar. However, after running the XRD on the soil sample, they say that it's not mortar, but an, quote, artificial soil that they also found about 100 feet down in the garden shaft. If you rewatch the segment, it's frustratingly clear that they edited Laird's explanation for it not being mortar, but something more specific. That's something else the narration then calls artificial soil, which in geology would indicate that it's not a native soil they found in the garden shaft, but a material that must have been introduced during construction of the shaft. And since it was only the narrator who called it artificial soil, it could just be a poor choice of wording. Assuming it is some sort of mortar or cement-like material, then I could see it being used on Lot 5 to strengthen the stone foundation, and similarly in the garden shaft to strengthen the structure and reduce flooding. However, discovering mortar in two different areas of the island that were created from the same basic ingredient doesn't seem to provide great evidence that Lot 5 and the money pit are directly related. If there really is good evidence that links the two areas, then I really hope they can elaborate. Regardless, Laird seems happy about the find. If the show doesn't follow up on the topic, maybe Laird will be able to fill us in after the season. Thanks for everything, Patrick. Patrick, just in general with Lot 5, within many aspects of the Lot 5 project this year, I can tell you Laird is very excited. There is a lot about this project, this lot, for an archaeologist to get excited about, right? I mean, if nothing else, nothing to do with a treasure or anything like that, this is what seems to be a fairly sizable structure completely undocumented in history and seems to be from very early on in the history of the Oak Island European settlement era, right? Let's face it. This is a good find. This is a good one. This is interesting, right? This is really cool. And they're not just chasing things. They're actually looking for information now. They're actually trying to tell the story now. Now, is it just as possible the Lot 5 has absolutely nothing to do with the Oak Island mystery as it does? Absolutely it is. Certainly nothing we have seen so far proves a link. And I think you really hit the nail on the head when you said, quote, if you rewatch the segment, it's frustratingly clear that they edited Laird's explanation for it not being mortar, but something more specific. And that's absolutely true. I think we all picked up on that. Suddenly, we went from mortar to calling it a, I think the word they use, quote unquote, soil sample. And there was very little explanation in why the change in wording. And that's the kind of thing that makes people question what they're being told, right? And that can never be a good thing for a show, at least not in my mind. Here's my thing on this, though. We are so early in the process here in Lot 5 that I'm just making a point not to jump to conclusions. Great stuff as always, Patrick. On that button, we still haven't seen it analyzed yet. Hopefully we do soon. And yes, so many people came there from the British Army, including you know, residents of the island that we know were part of the British Army, you know, Samuel Ball being one of them. So we know that. And finding a British Army button from that era of the Revolutionary War and post-revolution really isn't all that strange, especially since a lot of loyalists escaped from what became the United States to this area. So, you know, it doesn't say anything right now about the mystery, but it says something, at least in my mind, about the mystery of this structure. So maybe we could start following that path down and do some research into some of the people who own property on the island and live there who did have a past in the British Army. Was there anybody in the artillery there? Is there anybody who might have possessed such a thing? Could they have built something that they didn't document? And maybe if we search a little bit further, we'll find that they did build a big shed here or whatever it might be. I don't know. Patrick, when the season ends, we're going to really need your take on all this. So keep a weather eye out, my friend, for what might be coming. Let's finish up with an email from Pat who says, "Hi, Dave. This is my first time writing into you. I appreciate your show. I want to ask about what seems like a recent discrepancy. As Billy digs in the swamp, he hits a large stump. That leads to a discussion on the Curse of Oak Island and your podcast about the swamp being a wooded beach. That seems to conflict with another theory that Oak Island was once two islands, that a ship was purposely sunk hidden between them and the swamp created to cover it up. What do you think is accurate, if either? Thanks, Pat." Oh, Patrick, I'm rubbing my hands together here. What a great question. I love to talk about things like this. But before I begin, and I'm going to sound very learned and very, like, sure of myself here, let me preface this answer by saying I'm not a geologist. I'm not a historian. I'm not a scientist. I'm a podcaster, right? So take my answer with that in mind. To me, the idea that Oak Island was once two islands and that a ship was supposedly sunk in between these two islands and thus creating the swamp over it, I guess, in order to cover it up, is so far-fetched in my mind, it borders almost on the silly. The swamp is fed now by a natural spring, and it was quote-unquote created, at least in the form that we see now, when the road that you see there that they were digging up, the road that runs from the causeway to the money pit, was built. The people making that road came from the causeway, past what is now Dave Blankenship's house, and then needed to avoid this boggy area before they can get over to the money pit. So instead of going north around the bog, they went south along the beach. And they built it up and put that road on top of it, right? Thus blocking the fresh water from the natural spring from easily draining into the ocean, resulting in what the swamp is that we see now. Add all of that to the fact that whenever this ship was supposedly sunk in between these two islands, ocean levels were way lower than they are now, and not higher. So in order to create the swamp, they would first have, you know, they would have needed to both dam the north and south ends of the swamp, which we do not see any evidence of in either place, because according to the theory, the ocean ran between these two islands. They would have had to have dammed that all up. So you see where I'm going with this, right? They would have had to dam it up, but there probably wouldn't be any water going between the two islands. And if there were water going between the two islands, in order for all this to have worked, they would have needed more than just a ship to do it, because it would have had to have been pretty deep compared to what we see now. And they would have needed an incredible amount of earth to dam it all up, not only on both ends, but then to fill it all in. If these were two islands, this project would have been unimaginably hard and incredibly difficult. And then somewhere along the line, and remember, all done without any kind of thing but hand tools. And then after they finished doing this, putting a boat in there, filling it all in with some sort of backfill, some kind of way, some sort of dam, rocks, sand, whatever it took to fill in this whole area. And then magically a freshwater spring appeared out, somehow making its way up between the ship and all of this fill. It just doesn't make a lot of sense. And finally, if you want to hide a ship, why not just sail it into the middle of the ocean and light the darn thing on fire? That seems a heck of a lot easier than all of this, which just doesn't make any sense. When you start to think about it like this, the two-island buried ship theory just becomes so far-fetched, it borders on the ridiculous. You know, that's where I am on these theories. Was the swamp different in these time periods that they're talking about? Yes. Do we know what difference that is? No. But was there a channel between the two? Oh, I cannot even see how such a thing is possible, given what we know about ocean levels and the geology. Maybe millennia ago they were, but certainly not now. I can be proven wrong. And more importantly, I can be persuaded. I'm always able to be persuaded to believe one thing or the other. But at this point, that's how I feel about those two things. Great question, Pat. I love that kind of stuff. Keep them coming in. All right, folks, that's all for the emails. Don't forget, if you have any questions or comments, send them along to diggingoakisland@gmail.com. Okay, folks, it's time now to discuss Season 11, Episode 17 of The Curse of Oak Island, called Piling On. Let me just say right off the top, this was a fantastic episode. One of the best episodes I've seen in quite some time. I just loved it. It was so much fun to watch. Great pacing on it. Plus all the different things going on, the hurricane, the crackpot session, the tunnel underground, Vikings, Templars. It had it all, right? Again, the pacing of it also was just really, really good. This is a good template for what we've been saying we want more of, as opposed to some of the things in the past that we've been, you know, complaining about. This is what the future should look like for the show. A little bit of everything. Some theory, some digging, some analysis, some history, all that kind of stuff. It doesn't all have to be some potentially important clue when we know it's not, right? I mean, that's what I'm talking about. Elizabeth, I mean, just going back to how great this episode was, Elizabeth put it really well in the chat when she said about this episode, quote, some of this is making my head spin. Some of it is like an outline for a paper that was written out of order. Man, you got it, Elizabeth. But let me add this, in a really good way. Anyway, also, because the episode was a little different in its pacing from the last few episodes, it's kind of hard to divide it up like we usually do for the podcast. I'm going to give it a try. So as Gary says, let's get stuck in here. The episode opens with Rick, Alex, and Jack in the now familiar black SUV driving to Oak Island, obviously coming here after the hurricane to survey any possible damage. And I think it was Alex who says, as the island comes in view, well, the causeway is still there. I mean, that's one. At least you could still get over to the island. I don't know. It really would have sucked if it wasn't still there. But part of me would like to have seen them try to find a commandeer boat and get over to the island. I don't know. I digress. The first stop they make is over at the swamp, which is pretty well filled up with water here. And again, folks, before that road, the very road they're driving on here, was built, all of that water would have just flowed right into the ocean. But it doesn't anymore. And there you go. So I'm just saying, as I've probably said already too many times, this is indeed a quote-unquote man-made swamp, just not man-made in the fantastical way that some people like to think. Anyway, Rick gets out of the car. He restarts the pumps, which they say, or the narrator says, will, quote, take the rest of the week to drain all that water out of there. So needless to say, there is no work done on the swamp this week. So the next thing they do is they drive, get back in their SUV, and they drive over to the money pit where they meet with Roger, who's the guy from the Dumas company. And he's already there at the garden shaft, and work has already restarted. And they are actually really already back to digging here. So, you know, he says, in fact, that they're down to 99 feet. And that kind of made me pause for a second, because you remember when we were saying that they were only going to dig down to 95 feet? They said that for almost every episode up until now. I guess that's no longer the case. Either way, after checking in with Roger from Dumas and seeing that the work is going, it does look like the island weathered the storm pretty darn well. So let's start over at the money pit here, right? Or let's stay over at the money pit here. Later in the episode, we see the team is still digging around the area of RF1. This was a project started last week. They pulled up some wood out of an area right here, RF1, which was a caisson, a big area. They had this tested. This wood was pulled out last year or maybe the year before, but it was tested to be, you know, and determined that they wanted to continue looking here because of the testing results, which said it was, what did it say? Possibly Scandinavian. Maybe from Italy, France, or Norway, right? I think I'm thinking of the same wood. Anyway, Charles and Terry are here in the tent. The hole is down 151 feet. They find more wood here at the 151-foot level. And then they get down to, I think it was 100, and I don't have it written down in my notes here, but they get down to about the 190-foot area. And they realize that they've hit bedrock, right? So they can't go any deeper. That kind of puts an end to that. So that's all at that money pit sonic drilling thing. Then over at the, I'm sorry, I'm getting distracted here because I'm reading my notes and trying to get all this stuff straight because I'm remembering what's, trying to remember what's what here and who said what about what here. Over at the garden shaft, we see Scott Barlow meeting with Roger again from Dumas to check in on their progress. Roger tells him that they are hitting a lot of wood and they must be at the top of the tunnel, right, that they think is running underneath the shaft. So Scott goes down there to have a look, and sure enough, there are some pretty sizable timbers down there, one next to each other, which makes it look like a floor or maybe, I suppose, even possibly a ceiling. There's a lot of talk here about them being round logs and comparing them to the original descriptions of the platforms in the money pit when it was first excavated. Now, I don't know about you guys or what you thought, but they didn't look like round logs to me. They looked like planks. A bit later, you can see as they pull them out that they have like what you would call rounded edges. The guys think they look like they were cut by an adze, which means, or an axe, which means pretty old, you know, from before we were milling things up there. So anyway, Rick comes down later on in the episode to have a look, and he starts pulling some of them out of the ground. And we get a better look. Later, Gary goes down to detect. He finds some metal scraps down there as well. So hopefully, really, at the end of the day, what we're hoping for is that next week we get some good testing on this and some good analysis on this. Because we didn't get it here. Intriguing, but we got to see what happens. Okay, let's head now over to lot 15. And then you heard that right. We're going to lot 15, not lot 5. I know there's a lot of you out there who say you don't listen, watch the show, you just listen to the podcast. Well, we're going over to lot 15. And this is because of these stone piles we talked about last week, these stone cairns, depending on who says it. Before we have a look at these, let's just kind of back up a little bit and go to a war room session, kind of a crackpot session here, but this is with one Professor Gasparini, who also we heard about last week. He's from Italy. This is the guy they met last year when they were on the trip with Corey and Maul. He came up with this astronomical alignment thing that's relating Nolan's Cross to stars, and then therefore being able to date that through where the stars positioned were, position was at what time of history, right? Anyway, last week, Rick and the guys decided they're going to send him some more points around the cross to see if they fit into the alignment, and some of the points being these aforementioned stone cairns, and also something that's famous in Oak Island history, but not really given much time here on the show, and that is the stone triangle. This was an arrow-shaped, like, set of stones. It was discovered in 1897 by a searcher named Captain Welling along the south beach of the island, just south of the money pit. Now, Captain Welling was sort of a site manager. He worked with William Chappell and Frederick Blair on the Oak Island Treasure Company. He found this triangle, like I said, in 1897, and how it was reported is that it was equilateral, made entirely of beach stones, pointed due north. It's impossible really to go back now because, as the story goes with a lot of things, it was destroyed, apparently destroyed by the Dunfield expedition. Neither here nor there. Anyway, so they're going to add that to the list of things Gasparini's going to try to plot. Unsurprisingly, the points given last week, this triangle and these stone cairns, fit just so snugly into Professor Gasparini's theory. And due to a complicated process that he talks about of stars and history, he dates these alignments to 1250 and says that it must have been the Templars who would be the most likely culprit of doing such something like this. Now, predictably, I have a few questions. First, does anyone in the present know the exact layout and location of the triangle and its stones? Do we have GPS coordinates that get us down to the type of precision that we need for these alignments? Because if you looked at some of the alignments, it didn't look all that precise, just missing a couple of points, neither here nor there. And also, I hope that this means that we're now going to finally examine these things more closely. We're going to finally examine the stone cairns. We're going to finally examine the Nolan's Cross stones. We'll see. I also got to say, I'm not the only one that had questions. Steve on the Patreon asked, quote, has anyone else noticed they spend lots of time on theorists but don't give the historians much airtime to lay out their ideas about what happened and when? To which John responded, quote, great point. Some historical information on what was happening in the world in that rather exact time would definitely help make this more interesting. Gentlemen, I couldn't agree with you more. Like, a historian, or even a podcaster, could have asked the theorists at this point, why would the Templars have come to Oak Island in 1250 when they weren't arrested or disbanded until 1307? I mean, as I understand the theory, the Templars, during their persecution, took all of their most holy and most important treasures out of Europe, out of France, on the run to, some people say, to Scotland, right? And then from there to Oak Island to bury him, to keep him out of the hands of, like, the French king and his goons. Why would they have done that 5 decades before they were persecuted? It's a good question, one that needs to be answered. So after the war room session, we see Gary and Jack there over at Lot 15 detecting around the stone cairns. And there are a couple of things that fascinate me about these features. And we hear about their history from the narrator in the segment. They do a great job with it. Apparently, these cairns, of which there are, I believe, 5, if I have that correct, were described as between 5 and 7 foot tall rock piles in the shape of a pyramid. Now, Fred Nolan claims to have discovered them. I don't think the Lot 15 was Fred Nolan's, but he claims to have discovered them. It's right next to his property for sure. I think he discovered him back in the 1960s, early on in his day. And like most things that Nolan found, there is this weird air of mystery around what exactly they are, because these 7-foot-tall pyramids were apparently never photographed in their original form by Nolan, and instead were later knocked down. The narrator says they were dismantled by searcher activity. But what searcher, especially post-1960, would do something like that? When were they knocked down? Who knocked them down and why? Why are there no photographs? These are all the questions I have. Again, no one took a photograph of them in their original form. Are you kidding me? You see what I mean? There is always just something a little bit weird when it comes to Fred Nolan's discoveries in Oak Island. How was grabbing his camera not the absolute very first thing Fred Nolan did when he found these 7-foot-tall rock pyramids just steps from the money pit? Anyway, like I said, Gary and Jack are detecting around these stone piles, which used to be called pirate piles, if you didn't know that, back when everyone thought Oak Island might still contain pirate treasure. And during this scene, the narrator calls the piles believed to be 750-year-old cairns. Honestly, at the time of viewing, I had no idea how the writers came up with that number, but I guess, you know, I guess we know what it is from the Gasparini stuff. Anyway, Gary and Jack find a piece of what looks like, to me, scrap lead. Gary says it's decorated in some way, but it's hard to see what he means here. So hopefully we get a little bit more on that, which we do when Rick, Alex, and Doug Kroll bring this artifact over to the lab to have Emma Culligan and Laird Niven have a look. Emma says it seems chemically close to another find from 2021, which they called the Twisted Rod, right, or something like that. When the team had that artifact examined, the theory the expert had was that it was possibly Scandinavian. And what follows is this rant from everyone about the Vikings and the Templars, and did the Templars have contact with the Vikings and their information, yada, yada, yada. You know, not too much here. However, there is now two references in the last 2 weeks of Scandinavia and Norway. Remember, the wood they thought might, that we talked about before, might have been from France, Italy, or somewhat randomly, also Norway. And now we have this piece of metal, which kind of, the evidence isn't great, but could be Scandinavian. Anyway, I think we're going to need to keep this area of Europe in mind, folks, just for the next couple of weeks. Just might be mentioned again. And that's going to do it for this episode of the Digging Oak Island podcast. Don't forget, you can help out the show by becoming a patron. If you think this show is worth $5 a month to you, head over to patreon.com/diggingoakisland to learn more. And if you prefer, you can also make a one-time donation to the podcast via Venmo. Just use the username at Dave McBride Music. Also, if you'd like to help out the podcast in another way, then you could do so by giving us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts or anywhere you get shows. A big thanks to everyone who's done that already. I really do appreciate it. Thanks for taking the time, and thanks for the kind words. Don't forget, you can also follow the show on Facebook. Just put at Diggin' Oak Island into your search bar. And if you have any questions or comments you want to send directly to me, the best way to do that is via email, digginoakisland@gmail.com. Just keep in mind, if you send me an email or a direct message on social media, I may just answer it here on the podcast. So if you don't want your message read, just please make a note of that. All right, folks, it's crown time. So until we speak again, hopefully next week's episode will be just as good as this one. I'm Dave McBride. Thank you for listening to Diggin' Oak.